This is Marshall Masters for Yowza.com, that's YOWUSA.com, and in the second part of this two-part interview, we're going to cut to the chase with Marshall Van Summers.
Suddenly, I opened my eyes, and I saw through the world's disguise, and then it occurred to know the difference between the lies and the truth.
Hey there, Yowza subscribers and listeners at large. Welcome to part two of this two-part interview, Terrestrial and Extraterrestrial Disinformation. In part one, we talked about terrestrial disinformation with propaganda expert and author Philip Gardner. In this second part, we're going to talk with propaganda expert and author Marshall Van Summers. As we go into this interview, you may be wondering, well, the fellow is channeling extraterrestrials who only identify themselves as the allies of humanity. So what is it that they're bringing of value to this conversation about terrestrial disinformation? Well, here it is in a nutshell, folks. I want you to think about the last time you went to Walmart or wherever and you bought something you really didn't need on an impulse. Where did you get that impulse? Well, some hotshot on Madison Avenue cooked up a commercial and it just got right to you. Or how about that software program that you got on your computer and you really thought you needed it and it's just been sitting there forever. You probably haven't used it in months. Another hotshot sold it to you, but who created that? Well, another hotshot in the Silicon Valley or somewhere else, maybe in India. What do all these hotshots have in common? They think outside the box. And that specifically is what Marshall Van Summers is bringing to this discussion about disinformation. He is giving us a chance to think outside the box because what the allies of humanity are repeatedly telling us is that they are observing all of this that's going on from a distance. And they're giving us a completely different view on the matter. For us, we're all down at the tree line, banging our heads on trees. The allies of humanity, on the other hand, are sitting somewhere on a high overlooking peak, and they see it all happening. And they're trying to send us some important messages. And whether you believe that they're actually there and sitting on that peak is irrelevant. What you need to do is focus on the message, because the message is eminently practical. It gives us really good outside-the-box views of what's happening. So fasten your seatbelt, raise your tray to the upright lock position, and open your mind, because we're going to get into it with Marshall Van Summers.
Get a job, pay your taxes, pay your dues. You can live any way that you want to as long as you don't break any of their rules.
And this is Marshall, and I'm on with another Marshall, Marshall Van Summers. Welcome to the show, Marshall to Marshall.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you on, and I really am enjoying Allies of Humanity, your book, and I've been on your websites looking at things, and there's a tremendous amount I'm seeing in your work that parallels a lot of the things that we're finding, not from the left brain approach of our research, but more from the right brain side and finding out what's beyond this planet. And the first thing that really caught my attention, Marshall, is the whole concept of the greater community. All of these different species that are out there and how they get along. Could you paint a picture of that for us?
Well, the Allies of Humanity briefings are part of a larger teaching in the greater community way of knowledge that represents a broad spectrum of teachings on over 100 different subjects. But the focus on the greater community, this greater community of intelligent life, is a central part of this whole teaching that I have been receiving for the past 25 years. And it begins to paint a very real and comprehensible picture of what intelligent life looks like and how it functions in our local universe and the difficulties that even very advanced races have to face, difficulties in dealing with competition, resource acquisition, trade and travel, and so forth. And it begins to paint, I think, a very clear and prosaic picture of what we're going to encounter regarding intelligent races from the universe visiting our world and who we may ultimately encounter through our own explorations in space.
Okay, well, just as a point of reference, because, I mean, in popular culture, we have Star Wars and we have Star Trek. And these really portray us as humans, as a human species, interacting with other species. And there's really two very different views of what's going out there. There's a lot of similarities. So how does this greater community that you've been privy to understanding, differ from what we already understand in pop culture?
Pop culture represents our own desire to understand basically a non-human universe. And when we do that, we project our own human values and aspirations. We try to imagine what intelligent life could be like. And of course, we imagine other beings who are like us, at least enough like us that we can recognize them, who think at least somewhat like us. But the reality is that this greater community of intelligent life in which we've always lived is a non-human environment. And so the intelligence there are very, very different. The value systems in different worlds is very, very different. And I think we're going to have to acknowledge this, and this represents part of our preparation for emerging into this greater community of life, that we're really dealing with something that is not like a Star Wars environment. It's not like a Star Trek environment where, at least in Star Trek, everyone is human-like enough that we can relate with them. We're really dealing with something much, much different than how we understand ourselves.
Wow. So in terms of our pop culture, we have a very shaded view of it.
And also regarding Star Wars, it's interesting that you brought up the Star Wars analogy. In reality, war and large empires is very rare amongst highly advanced nations. And the reason that it's rare is advanced nations rely upon each other for trade and commerce. And they have created such a rigid and well-established network that anybody who threatens that network ends up being opposed by everyone in the network. And so, for instance, if you had a very predatory nation that was out engaged in conquest, it would be opposed by so many different nations who would be threatened by that kind of behavior. So this kind of greater community networking that happens between at least nations that trade with each other is such that it mitigates and to a large extent eliminates the kind of large-scale warfare that we here on Earth still engage in. And we're very primitive in that regard. And advanced nations begin to use the power of the mental environment to influence each other and to try to persuade each other or to win each other over. So it's more a battle of mind than a battle of force, because they all have a pretty equal technology with one another. Technology is something that can be purchased, stolen, traded. It's something that nations make sure that they have a parity in. And so the power in the universe isn't the use of force like in a Star Wars film. It is really the power of persuasion in the mental environment.
Okay, so it's a much more subtle environment.
It's a much more subtle environment. In some ways, it's more civilized, but it's also less free. And that the Allies briefings tell us that freedom in the universe is rare, and that those societies that do have freedom try to remain in obscurity, they function in secrecy, because a free society does not get along very well with an unfree society. And the larger technological powers are rarely have individual freedom in their social makeup. And so they view a free nation as a threat to their system, and of course a free nation views an unfree nation as a threat in reverse. So free nations tend to try to be anonymous and obscure and not get involved in the larger dealings of trading and exploring nations. And so there's a piece of wisdom from the greater community that I think is very important. And it tells us that the wise remain hidden to remain wise. This is a major teaching in the greater community way of knowledge. It's a piece of wisdom that has been learned through eons of the evolution of intelligent life in the universe. And it's a lesson that we as human beings certainly haven't learned. But it is a very important understanding to give us an idea of how freedom is secured in the universe and how it can be maintained in the presence of very powerful forces.
Wow. Well, then let's talk about a little bit more about the identifying aspects of this greater community. Do they use financial systems like us?
The greater community is, as the Allies of Humanity describes it, a competitive environment on a scale you cannot imagine. They do use financial systems. They trade in currencies and precious metals. They engage in commerce, but just on a vastly larger scale. There are, what I think the closest we could say in an analogy to our experience, there are corporate powers in the universe that are multiplanetary. But one of the interesting things in this picture is that large empires are very rare because they tend to be unstable. They tend to be eroded from their perimeters, and they tend to collapse within themselves. And we've seen this in our own world with very, very large empires, the Roman Empire, for example, or other expanding empires tend to be unstable. And so in the universe, the emphasis on growth and expansion is mitigated by the establishment of these large technological societies. And the other interesting thing I'll mention here, and this is part of this vision of the universe, is that all advanced societies have hit resource depletion. And that is why they're forced to trade, they become reliant upon other nations. That is why they try to maintain stability and security above all else.
Okay, so the problems that we're having are basically the problems of the cosmos.
As above, so below.
Mm-hmm.
We're just entering a larger arena of life where the powers are greater, the number of participants are greater, it is a non-human universe, but it is a truth with all life in the physical universe, that we find the limits of technology. We find the problems of competition survival continuing all down into space, is that technology does not eliminate those problems. In fact, if anything, it makes those problems more difficult to deal with. For instance, the United States today, as compared to 100 years ago, we were largely self-sufficient. We produced our own fuel, we grew our own food, we manufactured our own goods. Today, we are dependent upon other nations to provide us the absolute fundamentals for our energy use and so forth. We've given away a lot of our power and our freedom because of this dependence on foreign powers. And so in the universe, the very same thing happens, but on a vastly larger and more complex scale.
Wow. So it's the greater universe is... what, not necessarily a happy place to live in?
Well, the challenges of life, the challenges of dealing with the physical reality continue even as you leave your own planet. In fact, it not only continues, but it becomes more challenging, but also more rewarding. Now, in this greater community, there are large regions called uncharted territories where there are very few advanced nations. That these are territories that are not charted, are rarely ever explored, and so it is like a map of the world where you have concentrations of people living in cities, and then you have open areas where there's a very sparse population. And if you could map out our greater community, which I don't think anyone could, it would probably look like a map of the world where you have concentrations of worlds in close proximity. Then you have vast regions where races have evolved in isolation from one another, where there is very little trade or commerce. And so it begins to give us a sense of the needs and aspirations of races coming to our world. What would motivate them? And what would motivate them is the same thing that motivates us.
What, that they're in it for a buck?
Well, they have to survive. And to survive, they need resources. They need advantages. They're living in a very competitive environment.
Mm-hmm.
They're not coming to the Earth as saints or environmentalists. They're coming here because they have needs. And they see the world as a biological storehouse, as an immensely rich biological environment, which is, according to the briefings, very rare in the universe. Either worlds like this have been totally exploited by their home, by their native peoples, or they're just very, very rare. And so they're considered extremely valuable by other nations. And we happen to be a weak race, a weak divided race, stewarding a beautiful planet that is of value to others.
So we're like wide open targets like the Hawaiians were when Cook first landed.
Well, that's interesting you bring that up, because the lesson about intervention from what we know in more recent history, particularly what happened to the peoples of the Americas, of what happened to the people of the South Sea nations, what happened to the African continent, teaches us what intervention is. And intervention is always carried out for self-interest. As races became more sophisticated, it wasn't about the use of force. I mean, the Inca Empire was not overtaken by force as much as it was overtaken by illness and by clever planning and by deception. The Aztecs were not overcome by force or even by advanced technology. They were overcome because of the divisions within their nations, the divisions between tribes, and the superstitions of the people. And so we are also suffering from our own superstitions, and we are living in a divided world. And we are vulnerable to manipulation. And so a very small expeditionary force of economic force could come here and gain control of this world through deception and manipulation. And we're not used to combating strength at that level. So we're still thinking in terms of Star Wars, in terms of battles in space and blowing up planets and foolish things like this, when in reality out there, that doesn't happen because resources are too valuable. Nobody wants to waste anything. And so the power of influence in the mental environment is very strong, and we have not learned yet how to function at that level. We do experience influence. I mean, it's part of all of our experience. I mean, our parents tried to influence us. We tried to influence our children. Our governments are certainly trying to influence us. Commercial forces are trying to influence us. So we already live in an environment of influence, but it's the degree of power and scale in the greater community that we're going to have to adapt to.
Well, okay, then I have one question. Going back to something you said earlier, if we looked at the map of the greater community, it's much like a map of the world where you have these dense population centers and then you have these remote areas out in the hinterlands. In terms of the greater community, where's Earth's relative position? Are we somewhere out in the hinterlands, the unexplored territory, or are we a little pearl right in the middle of all the action?
Well, we're actually living in a highly populated part of the universe, where trade and commerce has been long established, where nations have established an equilibrium with each other that's long-standing, where war and conflict is very rare, and where outright conquest is not allowed. And so we have an advantage and we have a disadvantage living within this highly populated region. The disadvantage is others are aware of us.
Right.
The advantage is that we're not a world that's simply free for the taking. And the Allies briefings talk about this. It's very interesting. They say that if a race wants to gain power and ascendancy in our world, they have to do it by persuading the native peoples. They have to win over, at least to some degree, our agreement. They have to make it look like we agree or that we are not resisting them openly. And this is very important because a small group can accomplish this using advanced technology and the powers of persuasion. And if you look at how many people who are aware of the extraterrestrial presence in the world regard that presence, you will see that often people, they want to believe that it's good, they do believe that it's good, and that many writers and pundits are proclaiming the nobility of the extraterrestrial without ever knowing anything about these source forces or what's really motivating them. And this is one of the reasons that the briefings were sent to us, to warn us against premature contact.
Oh. So really, in a first contact situation, we're not being welcomed into a greater community. It's because we're a prize.
Well, indeed, the world is a prize. I mean, we are the native peoples living in a world of immense biological diversity, a world that we're rapidly destroying through greed and corruption and overuse and conflict and war. And it's the advent of great weapons and it's the destruction of our natural environment that has sent this current intervention to the world, an intervention that's very different than previous visitations to our world from the greater community.
Well then, in that event, when we come back in the next segment, let's talk about humanity as the prize, foibles and all, because we got a sweet little place, and yeah, we are trashing it. So hang with me.
Now, for the benefit of those of you out there that are still scoffing at the notion that little green men are talking to Marshall Van Summers, let me point out the fact that European governments are now joining with Central and South American governments in disclosing their UFO secrets. In fact, a former guest on this show, Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, has come out and disclosed that UFOs are in fact real, that ETs do exist. The difference between his take on the matter and that of Marshall Van Summers is that he believes them to be largely benign. Whereas Marshall Van Summers, on the other hand, as you've already learned in this interview, sees things differently. He sees a more competitive mix, something that really doesn't reflect human projections, if you will. And regardless of what you may be thinking about what he has to say, we can't deny the fact that he's already answered one of the most pressing questions used by every UFO debunker that's ever walked the earth. And that one is always the classic, well, if they exist, why haven't they landed on the White House lawn? Well, the question is not if they will land on the White House lawn. That is an issue of timing. If you are covertly trying to enslave a world, landing on the White House lawn is the last thing you do to declare your final victory over a species. And how do they achieve that final victory? By getting as many people as possible saying as often as possible these four magic words. I don't get involved. But what about those of us who go, give me liberty or give me death? I'm one of them, and I think there's a lot of you out there. I think those of you that are still listening to this interview are of that ilk. And the ones that are saying, well, I don't get involved, they've already uninvolved themselves a long time ago. And so, as an individual, you now have a simple decision. Are you going to let these vast numbers of apathetic people decide your fate for you? Or are you going to stand up and say, this is my planet, and you will not do this? Not while I draw breath. And if you're willing to do that, here's the good news. We don't have to rise up and martyr armies to go achieve this. That's because we possess power that is immense. And this is the power that the Dark Masters really fear, because if we realize our inner potential and we use it, they will lose. And what is that power? Well, for that, I would direct you to go to the article on the site in support of this interview called This Information Playbook. Specifically, you want to go to page 2 of that. And this is my foreword to the 8 Traits of a Disinformationist by Michael Sweeney. In there, I show you what our power is. It is the power of truth. It is the power of love. Not the kind of romantic love that gets dished out to us by Hollywood yutzes, but the love that God gave us to express here on this planet so that we evolve into becoming what we really can be, what we're destined to be, without letting these dark masters take us off into pointless side trips of pain and suffering. And when you're finished reading that article, you're going to understand your true power as an enlightened individual in taking this anti-disinformation response to the Dark Masters. But you know, right now I can almost hear the question in many of your minds. Well, sure, I can do this by myself, but what about others? Are other people going to join me in this? You bet they are. And to help you understand why, I have published, in support of this interview, a small book by the name of The 100th Monkey. This little book came out during the height of the Cold War. And it was really addressing the fears of the day about us destroying ourselves in a nuclear holocaust. Well, we're still worried about that today. But the point of this that is directly relevant to what we're discussing here is the critical mass that's necessary to turn what are essentially individual efforts into a grassroots movement, one that is so pervasive it just simply overwhelms all of the remorseless and inhuman tactics of the Dark Masters and their disinformation minions. Read the article, think about it, then go take action. You'll be surprised. It won't require that many of you working quietly, anonymously in the background, to create something wonderful. In the next break, I'm going to give you some purely technical tips that you'll want to use as an anonymous warrior in the war against disinformation. Now let's get back into it with Marshall. Marshall, in this segment, we're really going to talk about humanity and the Earth as being the prize for all of these exploiters that are here looking for resources. And most important, as you pointed out, for our help in letting them get that. Without our help, obviously they can't. The thing that I see as a researcher that is a worse enemy to us than any of these species is our own cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance is just, in a simple layman's term, if it's inside the blinders, I'll believe it. If it's outside the blinders, I won't believe it. But who defines the blinders is up for grabs. And that's the problem with cognitive dissonance. And it's a cultural thing. It's very subtle. For example, in Japan, they're more open to this. Japanese television has been running phenomenal programs on 2012 and Planet X, and the Japanese look at it, and if it's interesting, they read it or they watch it. If it's not, they just go, it's not interesting, and they move along. But here in Western cultures, if it's not inside the blinders, we just don't say, well, thanks, we're going to move on. No, we've got to go trash it. We've got to be angry. We got to say, this is not what I want to hear. So you're this and you're that, and ad hominem attacks. And it leaves people just who are trying to get this information out feeling like, hey, I know how Noah, I know what Noah went through.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay.
It wasn't raining when he built the ark.
That's right. You know, and how many people walked up to Noah and said, hey, what have you got available in the way of staterooms above the waterline? Or here's one that'll throw you. Hey, can I help? You didn't have that. But they're out there pounding on the hull after it's way too late.
Yeah.
And that's the problem here. It's, in other words, can we succeed where Noah failed? So in order to understand that, we really have to say, why are we as a species such a prize, or are we an impediment and the real prize is our planet?
Well, this is a very important question, because actually both are true. In a way, we are an impediment, but what the briefings and what the teaching in the greater community way of knowledge show us is that one of the chief problems that any advanced race has in coming to our world is the biological hazard. What I mean by that is, if you're living in a sterile environment and you have evolved in a sterile environment, living in space or living in a highly technological society where your exposure to other organisms is either non-existent or extremely limited and controlled, for you to enter a biosphere, the sphere of life in our world, represents an almost overwhelming hazard. And no one in the universe has developed enough countermeasures to deal with the diversity of life in a world such as ours. And that is why the world has not been colonized successfully before. Attempts to colonize our world have failed. And so, in a sense, we are needed as the extension of a foreign race to function here. They cannot breathe this atmosphere. They cannot expose themselves to the biological reality, the biosphere of our world. And this is, I think, a point that many people never take into consideration when they think about the possibilities of extraterrestrial life coming here and why the visitors that are here, those intervening forces, behave in the ways that they do, why they are so very clandestine, why they operate out of view almost all the time, why their craft are so deeply hidden. It is not just because of human awareness. It is also because of the nature of our world and the problems that a non-adapted race is going to have to function here. So to go back to your question, they need us as their intermediaries here. We are adapted to the world, this world, they are not. And that is why there's the whole interbreeding program, the whole abduction phenomenon that, you know, in the last 20 years through the work of Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs and other researchers has really come to light. It's a very difficult subject to deal with, but it has two important goals. One is to establish a transgenic being who is adapted to the planetary environment, but who is allegiant to a foreign power. And it also is used for the psychological impacting of people, the turning of people, so that they will become representatives or apologists for the extraterrestrial presence in the world today. And we see a lot of evidence of people who are speaking and writing who are encouraging a kind of blind contact with unknown forces in the universe, which from any kind of position of wisdom or discernment is extremely foolish, extremely premature. But there are many people out there doing just that.
Yeah, and case in point with history, for the Hawaiians, it was when the ships started showing up, the women were sleeping with the sailors, bringing back incredible amounts of diseases.
That's right.
And the syphilis, gonorrhea, measles, it was devastating. And so that careless abandon at which you go and you greet the strangers can be just as dangerous as the strangers trying to adapt to your environment.
This is a very important point. You know, in the history of South America, a Pizarro and his 162 men, they overtook a nation that was, its empire extended for 3,000 miles. But preceding their arrival, the plague had already swept through all of northern and central South America, just devastating the population. And so for a foreign visitor to come and expose themselves to the biohazard of our planet and take that home or take that back to whatever their base of operations, whether it's in space or on a terrestrial planet, is immense. I mean, this is the power of nature that ultimately, as the Greek tragedies tell us, you can never fully overcome. You can never fully overcome the powers of nature. And this is something that I think the people who are in love with technology and have a lot of hubris about technology tend to think that technology is going to overcome all of the problems of living in physical existence. But in the greater community, that hasn't proven to be true.
So even these races, with all their advanced technologies, have not gotten to the point where better living through chemicals.
Well, you can't defend yourself against everything. And if you're coming from a sterile environment, imagine being actually raised and adapted to a sterile environment, genetically adapted to no interface with unseen biological agents into a world such as ours is just immensely difficult. And so the only way that you can establish a presence and authority here is by interbreeding with the native peoples who are adapted to this environment. Now, the reason that this is happening now, as opposed to not 100 or 1,000 years ago, is that human beings have established an infrastructure that other races can use. And it has been aided by the very subtle introduction of alien technology, which we think is immensely beneficial to us, perhaps. But in fact, we're creating a planetary network that others can use and utilize, whereas 100 years ago, that kind of network simply did not exist.
Are you talking about the Internet?
Well, the Internet, I mean, the computer chip, I mean, all these sudden massive advances in technology, you know, that all within the space of a year or two, technology leaps in more than it did 100 years previously. I mean, this is the introduction of technology, which is very unhealthy for us, actually, because ultimately it will lead to a kind of technological dependence. But we are in a very important position as far as intervention goes. We're damaging the most valuable resources of the world. We're developing nuclear power and other kinds of powers that can be taken out into the greater community. And we're facing a set of circumstances in our own world with resource depletion and environmental degradation that will destabilize the human civilization, which is a perfect environment into which intervention can come. And that is why you can see why the United States would be led into an intractable, unwinnable war in the Middle East, and why our leaders would be encouraged to take such drastic and really foolish actions to weaken us, to weaken our allies, to break up the centers of power within the world and to weaken them. Because it is into a divided environment that a small force can come and establish itself.
Right. Just weaken the beast.
It's a divide and conquer, but again, it's using, you know, a very subtle tactics. And again, the use of force in the greater community, at least in areas where nations have adapted to each other and where there's concentrations of power, the use of force is minimally used. And the powers of persuasion are brought to bear. And this represents a greater panorama of power and competitiveness in our universe. And we have not adapted to that. And that is why the Allies talk about the importance of knowledge. And hopefully we'll have some time to talk about the importance of knowledge, what they refer to as knowledge, as a deeper intelligence within us that is the only part of us that is free from persuasion of any kind, because it's basically divine.
Well, we definitely want to talk about our allies, but first I want to talk about our foes. Because what you've said so far is that we have races that are coming in, they're intermingling, they're using our technology to get control of us very subtly. And I do see this subtle manipulation going on all the time. I've become very, very attuned to it because our general message is running counter to those interests, and they're attacking us. And by being attacked, you come to understand your enemy.
Well, we're actually creating the very environment in which an intervention like this could succeed. What we are doing to ourselves and to one another, the cognitive dissonance that you mentioned, the emphasis on the division between tribes and nations and peoples and religions, and the depletion of our resources, which is critically important in terms of, you know, our future in space, whether we're self-sufficient or not, all of these things are leading us into a position of tremendous vulnerability and powerlessness. And it's what we are doing to ourselves, heedlessly, foolishly, is really increasing the vulnerability that humanity has to unwanted and unwarranted forces coming to our world.
Okay.
And on top of that, you have the deception of the intervention itself.
Right. But the bottom line with all this intervention is very simple. If you're stupid, you deserve to die.
If you don't prepare for eventualities, then nature will be unkind to you. I mean, Pasteur said, you know, chance favors the prepared mind.
Oh, I love you saying that. That is right on the back of our book, Planet X Forecast.
Is it really? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Love it. That's it. You know, the check's in the mail.
And, you know, we know from experience that nature is unmerciful to the unprepared.
Right.
And so the calling of the Allies briefings isn't to frighten us. It's to warn us, but it's also to serve our preparation. It is our destiny to emerge into a greater community of intelligent life. That is where our future is going to be. That is where we are going to become united, strong, if we're ever going to become united and strong. It is going to be in facing the great waves of change that are happening in our world, environmental change, and it's facing a greater community of intelligent life that's going to look at us as a potential ally, a potential foe, as a resource, as all of these things.
But the bottom line is, if we do not get out there as being an invaluable ally, then at that point, we're stupid and we deserve to die. Let's just be blunt. Okay, if we can't pull together as a race, then the gist of what I'm getting here with you is that these other species that are coming in, that they want our planet, they want our resources, once they have all the biological essence that they need from us to achieve that goal, then the rest of us are redundant. We're not necessary, and then the rest of us no longer serve an existence other than to become fertilizer for a new Earth.
Well, let me. I think that's very good. There's just some slight things I want to add, and this is from the briefings themselves.
Mm-hmm.
That the interbreeding program is not to replace the race; it's to install a new leadership, and the leadership it installs is not the visible leadership. It's not the elected official.
Mm-hmm.
It's the person who advises the elected official.
Mm-hmm.
And that we are valued as a workforce to a foreign power. The critical thing for us is to use our native abilities to see ourselves as the native peoples of this world, to learn the lessons of intervention, to bring that native wisdom that nature and history has given us time and time again.
Mm-hmm.
Into this critical threshold that we're now beginning to face the reality of the greater community. We're no longer viewed as just a primitive people, you know, lost in the jungles or deserts of the world. I mean, we are governing this planet, and we have the adaptive ability. We also have enough resonant freedom in our world, and I know this is going to be surprising to some of your listeners, compared to other nations in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
We are fairly free. We still have religious traditions. We still value ethics. We still value the power and the potential of the individual. Where in highly technological societies, that just doesn't exist anymore. It's the reliance upon technology, the uniformity of these nations, and you do not want to become an ally to these nations. You want to become free. You want to become independent. You want to become self-sufficient, because that gives you the greatest possibility to maintaining self-determination within this larger arena of intelligent life.
All right. Well, in that event, when we come back in the next segment, I want to talk about our rights as a species with specific regard to three things. First off is our right as a species to evolve as the stewards of our planet, and that it's ours and it should be respected.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that we have to evolve to that role, because right now we are about as moralistic with our planet as cockroaches and locusts. But the second thing is, how do we deal with those that want to exploit us? And three, how do we expand our alliances with those that want to ally with us? Okay?
Very good.
Should I say what I'm thinking now? Should I?
In this segment, I'm going to give you some insights as to things you can do of a technical nature to help you anonymously go out and wreak havoc with the disinformation operatives. I want to tell you a little bit about my background. Before starting my publishing business, I worked in the computer industry for over 2 decades and in many different roles. In the last 5 years, I specialized in internet technology, particularly that black hole on the other side of your modem that just makes things mysteriously work. And my client list included notable firms such as AT&T, Sun Microsystems, Hewlett-Packard, Lockheed Martin, and Boole & Babbage. I stay current, I watch and I see what's happening with things, and so I developed what I call a less is more strategy for those who are going to challenge disinformation operatives. That being, less Microsoft is more safer, because as far as I'm concerned, in my own opinion, Microsoft is the internet kung fu of the Dark Masters. And there are things that those of us in the computer industry have long known about Microsoft and the Windows operating system. When 95 first came out, there was a company, a security company in the South, that actually found a back door into the Microsoft operating system that had been intentionally created for the NSA, the National Security Agency. What happened next was truly sad. To the shock of those of us working in the computer industry, we watched as a massive, massive, and brutal disinformation campaign was unleashed on this company, and with crippling results. And these attacks continue. There is a company called Zone Alarm, and Zone Alarm has a pretty good firewall software. In a recent automatic update that Microsoft released, they put in code that literally blocked the access to the internet for everyone using Zone Alarm. It was a real panic problem for Zone Alarm users. It was all across the country, and there was hardly a peep about it. But it was a very effective attack. And, of course, the typical response was, Well, isn't that an interesting coinkydink? It's always an interesting coinkydink. Other companies don't do this. Microsoft does, and it's always an interesting coinkydink. So here's what you do. First off, you go into your Windows operating system and you turn off automatic updates. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. If there's an update you specifically need, download it and install it, but do not automatically download it. And to protect your valuable information and your system, I recommend that you get yourself something called Acronis. You can buy it at Costco. Millions of people use it. It's excellent software. It's similar to Norton Ghost by Symantec. Now, I will say that for a long time, as a computer expert, I just simply could not conceive of not having a Norton product on any computer I was using. With that in Windows is just like peas and carrots. But in the last few years, Symantec has become very much like Microsoft. The code is bloated, ineffective. People that have Norton Ghost are routinely reporting on Amazon reviews and elsewhere that the software just fails them again and again and again. So for taking backups of your system, use Acronis. Doing tune-ups, keeping your system performing well, is important too. There's a little package called TuneUp. It's on the internet. It's about $50. And it works elegantly and simply, just like the old Norton used to work. In terms of protecting your system from viruses, if you're already on Microsoft OneCare, get off. They have the updates that automatically go right into your system. And remember about Microsoft, it is the Internet Kung Fu, the Dark Masters. So the less access you give them, the more safer you are. And there are good competitors. Oh, there are the ones that we know. There's Norton and there's McAfee. But frankly, there's some free services out there that are just as good. And the first one that comes to mind for me is called Avast, A-V-A-S-T. This is free. They also have packages that you can buy for additional features. The thing about any of these security systems is that you go on the internet and you read the reviews. I'm not talking about the ones that the editors of the magazines write because they are always glowing reviews because they go down the checklists. Nah, that's not what you want to read. You want to read the user reviews. You want to see where they bleed because that's the real truth of it. In terms of using a firewall for your system, if you don't already have like a home network router with a built-in firewall, then you can buy one for about the cost of a good firewall software solution. I prefer the hardware. For those of you that are using a Microsoft email client, get rid of it. This is a Trojan horse entry point into your system. What you really want to do is get yourself an online email client through Gmail or Yahoo. They filter their systems extensively to make sure they trap out these viruses and Trojan horses long before they get anywhere near you. And the nice thing is you can read your email online, and if there's something you want, you can download it very simply. And while we're on the topic of email, let's talk about the one thing we've noticed about disinformation operatives that is a real sore thumb indicator. 90% of their attacks come from a Microsoft Internet address, such as Hotmail, Live, or MSN.com. Obtaining these email addresses is very simple for them to do. And once you have an email address, you can go anywhere else. And what these disinformation operatives always do is they never hold on to them for very long. They use them and lose them real fast. Well, you do the same thing. Don't use your permanent primary email address. Create artificial personas just like the disinformation operatives do. Then use them and lose them. You see, you don't have to be like me. You can do this anonymously. I have to be right out front where they can slap a bullseye on me, but you don't have to do that. And now we're going to get into the final segment with Marshall. This will wrap up our two interviews. And afterwards, I'm going to share with you what I believe to be the single greatest threat to our ability to use the internet to defend ourselves from disinformation. Now let's get back to it.
Oh, give me something to hold on to as a venture.
And the out of the last segment and said three things we want to talk about in terms of our rights as a species. Right to have our own world, assuming we want to be good stewards of it, but also our right to deal with these dark forces. And three is our right to build allegiances and alliances with those that we would want to ally with.
Yes.
The mic's yours.
Very good. Well, certainly our right to evolve has to be inalienable. I know that's a kind of a pun of a term in this context. But this is our planet of origin. I mean, we were given this planet to evolve, and it's a divine right we have to be here. But because we have a right doesn't mean we're not going to have competition, because competition is part of nature. We're going to have intervention, because intervention is part of nature. Colonialism is intervention. We see intervention everywhere. We see intervention throughout the world today as strong powers try to control the fate and the awareness of weaker powers. And so we're entering into an environment where we're going to have to deal with these kind of realities. And that is, as Jefferson said, you know, the price of freedom is vigilance. But we're not bringing vigilance to our borders of space. We are so preoccupied with our contentions with one another, our struggling over who's going to have wealth and resources. We are not paying the kind of attention that we need to pay as the native peoples of a world. We have a right to this world, but we're going to have to grow up. We're going to have to unite to share the resources of this world. We're going to have to unite to face this greater community together, because whether you're rich or poor, whether you're the most powerful person in the world or the person living in the street, we all have the same fate and destiny. If we make a mistake, if we are foolish regarding our contact with the reality of life beyond our borders. And I think we're at kind of an adolescent phase right now. We're experiencing the beginnings of power, but we're not very responsible. We're not very, we don't heed the future. We do things in a reckless manner. So we're in an adolescent phase of our species maturity, and we're going to have to move into a greater maturity. And that's going to be led by important individuals. I mean, everyone is not going to make that jump together, but it's going to be led by visionary and powerful individuals who realize the threat we have facing us in terms of environmental decline in our own world, and the probability and the reality of intervention and competition from beyond our world. We're going to have to face these. This is part of growing up, entering a galactic neighborhood. You're no longer a little child just living in your own house. You're venturing out into a bigger neighborhood. And that is exactly what is happening to us now. Now, regarding interference, this is a very important question. And because of the nature of the intervention, what constrains us? We must not allow ourselves to be persuaded that any race is going to come here to save or rescue humanity. Any race that claims to do this is really using manipulation for their own end. This is the same kind of manipulation that was used to win over native cultures. We have seen this happen time and time again. Now, while it is possible that extraterrestrial races in the world today are an exception to the rule that intervening forces are always here out of self-interest, they would have to prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And that has not been proved. I mean, they are here without our permission. They are functioning with impunity in our world. They are doing whatever they want. They are taking whomever they want. They are experimenting on people. I mean, this is a gross violation of our fundamental rights as the native peoples of this world. And very few people are speaking out against this. And so the intervention is proceeding forward with very little resistance on our part.
Let me ask you this question in a reverse way. By our actions to this point, we have essentially invited these exploiters in. How do we uninvite them? How do we deal with these dark forces?
What we need to do now, really, if we're talking about what is really going to make a difference, is going to be the cessation of human conflict. It's going to be the public awareness of intervention. It's going to be eyes turning to space. It's going to be resisting uninvited, unregulated visitation to our world. I mean, as the native peoples of our world, we have the right to determine who can come here and under what conditions. We are not exercising those rights. We are not claiming those rights. We are not broadcasting out into space that we are a free and self-determined people. We are behaving in a reckless manner, and we are not paying attention. And the intervention is also has its own pacification program underway, and that is to present itself as a benign and spiritually enlightened force. when in fact what is really going on is very nefarious. It's extremely unethical.
How can you trust anyone that is using any kind of program that lacks any semblance of transparency? And that's, to me, that's the hallmark of evil intent.
That's exactly right.
If you are genuine, you play your cards out on the table.
Yeah.
But this is, we're dealing with folks that are keeping their cards up their sleeves.
Well, that's exactly right. And they're engendering a kind of belief amongst many people whom they've contacted and whom they've taken to believe that they are the saviors in the future of humanity. And some people even think they're the parents of humanity, that they somehow genetically seeded us and they have a right, proprietary right to this planet. I mean, there's things that are going on out there in terms of persuasion and deception that are just phenomenal. So we have to look at the experience, the history of discovered people. Margaret Mead said, and I quote, "It is the unfortunate position to be the race or the people that is discovered."
Oh, yeah.
We are being discovered. And what that means for us is we are going to have to take this on as a major issue, a major priority with governments, with people. And the more that people can bring this, break through the veil of ridicule, bring this conversation up to the surface. There are so many experiencers out there. There are so many people that have witnessed contact or had contact and they need to come forward. We really have to open the veil here. It's very, very important. And the other thing that has to stop is that we must find a way to alter the resource depletion that's happening on our planet. Because if we deplete those resources past a certain point, we will accept any offer that's made to us from any foreign power. We will not be able to refuse the terms. And that is a position that no native people wants to be in.
We're seeing that right now with the oil crisis. That's a classic example, Marshall, of we have just been completely reckless in our dependence on foreign oil. Now, the fact is that the technology's there. There's a gentleman who uses algae to make alternative biofuel for trucks, for diesels.
Mm-hmm.
They could go out and turn a quarter of the state of Nevada into a huge processing facility and grow enough of this to keep every truck on the road going.
Well, we're going to need to do these things, and time is of the essence, because as our energy supplies are depleted, we're going to go into ever-increasing instability, and it's happening all over the world right now. I just returned from touring Iran. I was in Iran for 3 weeks. I just got back from Europe. I was in Europe for 3 weeks. I mean, the resource depletion issue everywhere is just immense. And so we are going to have to stabilize our situation. We are going to have to unite to do that. I think human unity now isn't just a moral prerogative. It's an absolute necessity. And we're also going to have to speak out against this intervention. And because it is really, it's a total violation of our inalienable rights as a native people. And I think the last thing I want to touch upon, which is more dealing with the power of our spirituality, we're going to have to recognize that we all, each one of us, has the power to see and to know and to act beyond the influence of persuasion. We can see and know the truth if we are willing, if we bring that courage to the situation. The universe is not going to give us what we want. It's going to give us what it is. And we have to see what it is. We have to look at the evidence of the extraterrestrial presence. We have to know the history of intervention in our world. And we do this without fear and without hopeful expectation. There's a kind of a midpoint clarity that we have to bring to this, like the clarity that the surgeon brings to the surgery. You know, they're not living in hope. They're not living in fear. They're just present to the situation. What must I do? What must each of us do?
Well, I mean, it's on one hand, I think it's legitimate to say I hope for our species to pick up its mantle and to evolve as good stewards in a more evolved species, to hold that hope. But in the same time, yes, coming at this eyes wide open and saying, all right, that's tomorrow. What's today? I'm here in the present.
You know, the thing is that the intervention itself is the thing that could finally mobilize humanity. Because, again, the very thing that threatens us has the power to unite us. And I'm cautiously optimistic here. I know the odds appear to be against us in this, but from the vision I've been given from the angelic source, we can do this and we must do this. This is the future of humanity is on the line. It is going to be on the line in the next 5 to 10 years. That is it. 2012, 2015, 2020, it's all going to be on the line. Every year is going to be extremely different. Challenging, I meant.
Right.
We are going to be facing challenges from within and challenges from without. And I think as a people, this can unite us and mature us, force us to cooperate with each other. We don't have to love each other, but we do have to cooperate. This is like the house on fire where everybody has to pitch in to save the house or to save the ship, like a ship on fire.
Right.
And we are like a ship on fire right now.
Oh, absolutely. And it is about us, you know, having the common sense to say that even despite our differences, we have to accept our differences. We have to be able to agree to disagree. But the one thing we can agree on is the use of force against someone who's peaceful. And that is something where we do have to agree. It was an interesting thing that you talked about the greater community, where if someone, any one of these species is going to make war on another, everyone becomes their enemy. It's in the disinterest of everyone to allow that to happen.
That's exactly right.
Whereas here, we just look the other way. We pass a few resolutions in the UN, pretty much, that's it, and we look the other way.
We're still behaving as a tribal people.
Right.
Still competing and fighting with each other over who's going to be at the top of the hill. And in a more mature environment, nations realize the ultimate cost of that, and they seek a steady state. They seek an equilibrium.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be stable. They're huge. They've become immense. They need to be stable. Stability and security becomes the most important thing. And so we haven't learned yet that that is the most important thing for a race such as ours. We now have overtaken the planet. We are overtaking the planet to our detriment currently. We are facing the beginnings of competition. This is just the beginning. Those intervening forces that the Allies described is just the beginning.
Oh, really? Tell us a little bit about what's on the back end.
Well, we're going to be facing intervention, or the attempts at intervention through various means, ongoing.
Right.
And this is why a native people is going to have to unite and establish its own rules of engagement, determine how it's going to deal with attempted visitation. It's going to have to educate its people.
But hold on a second here. Are you saying that if we don't come together and deal with this, then we're not only a prize for the current nasties, if you will, but that once the current nasties have really mastered us, then there's going to be the ones that, the nastier nasties, that are going to go after their prize as well? It's like a pack of dogs quarreling over a piece of meat.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up, because the most advanced nations in our galactic neighborhood are not the ones that are generating the current invention. The current invention is being generated by small groups of economic forces that are very aggressive. They take huge risks. And if they prove to have success, then larger powers will get involved. It's kind of like the phenomenon of creation in our world. You know, the things are created by small groups of people, and then large corporations come in and take it over.
Right.
Take over the creations. Well, it's, in a way, it is kind of like that. So we have to be very careful here in presenting ourselves to the universe in a more united front. And we are going to have to face this reality.
So the bottom line here is that what we're really dealing with, you know, like if this were the oil business, what we're really dealing with here is a bunch of bootstrap small companies, wildcatters out there poking holes in the ground, seeing what they could find. And then after that, the seven sisters come in and just take everything for pennies on the dollar.
I think that's a very good analogy.
But the bottom line is that right now we're dealing with the wildcatters. And if we don't defeat the wildcatters, the chevrons of the cosmos are going to come in, and then that's it. We're toast as a species.
Well, we lose our freedom as a species. We lose our self-determination to become a client state to some foreign power.
Well, if you don't have determination, you don't have freedom, you're toast.
Yeah. In essence, it would be an existence that would be utterly deplorable to us. And again, freedom is not free. Freedom in the universe is not free. You know, it has to be won, it has to be maintained, it has to be protected. I mean, this is just a reality of life. I'm not being fearful or negative in saying these things. I mean, anybody who has gained any wisdom from the world knows that this is true. It has been shown to us over and over. I think ultimately the hope that the Allies gives us is that we have the strength to do this, and the intervention itself, more than any other stimulus, could move us to act in a way that is truly in our own self-interest.
Well, I mean, I certainly hope so. That's the thing I'm pulling for. But you know, the question here is, how do we strengthen our bonds with these allies? Because they're not in, you know, the goodwill and the knowledge is there. They're giving us the knowledge to deal with this. How do we eventually, even if we do defeat the Wildcatters, do we have the chevrons of the cosmos that are going to come in and just, you know, lay waste to us? Do we still have to deal with those issues?
Well, as mentors, they need to give us some information we don't have, which is what they're doing through this set of briefings. They need to educate us about what is beyond our borders, and we need to have a sober approach to that. They're giving that to us. They're telling us that we have a world of tremendous value, that we as a human family is of tremendous value. We need to value ourselves. We need to stop undermining our confidence in ourselves as individual, confidence in the potential of human leadership, because we certainly need good leadership, confidence in human institutions. This is all being eroded away by the events of the world and by the actions of the intervention. And so we are going to have to pull ourselves together. And one of the things that I'm doing is I have presented the entire Allies of Humanity set of briefings, the first set of briefings, because there's two sets, free online. I want everyone to go and read this all over the world. I'm doing what I can to bring this material to as many people as possible. If people can't afford it, or if they can't gain access to the books themselves, which are now available worldwide, then I want them to have this information. I really, you know, we can only do what we're sent here to serve to do.
Right.
And this is my service. You're doing your service. Other people need to be called to service. And the more people who can be called to a greater service for the welfare of humanity, you know, the better our chances will be. That's what tips the scale ultimately.
So then through awareness, through coming together, you know, following a path of light and love, but at the same time, being in the present, you know, not going and singing kumbaya and la la la, but to have a noble purpose.
Yeah.
And this is the way that we come together and we keep our world.
That's right.
And we keep our species.
We win the right to be a free people in the universe, to be part of the greater community, to be a free and sovereign nation in the greater community. We win that right. This is our gift to our children. This is the gift to the future. We've all been endowed by God to give specific gifts to the world, to learn how to discover them, to be in service. We're going to have to do that now. It's not about ownership and personal wealth and escaping into our hobbies and fantasies. We're going to have to be called into a greater service. And I think the Allies briefings and everything that I write represents one expression of this calling into a greater service. And, you know, when you are called into a service like this, you can't rely upon the odds. You know, it always looks like it's going to be impossible, but it is not impossible. It is not impossible to change your life. It is not impossible to change your mind. It is not impossible to overthrow all the social conditioning that has turned us into, you know, a bunch of sheepish consumers. We have a greater power living within us. This power needs to come forth. And what's going to call it out of us are the very conditions that are being created in the world right now.
I agree. It's not impossible. You know what the Marines say about impossible? It just takes a little longer.
That's very good.
So, Marshall, this has been a fabulous show. Look forward to having you on again, discuss this in more detail. And, wow.
It's been a pleasure having a visit with you today.
Oh, it's a pleasure having you on. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To play these games, I want you to love me just the way I am.
As we come to a close on this two-part interview, I want to talk about another trend that I've seen popping up that concerns me, and I want to share it with you. It is duration. How long do these disclosures and leaks remain on the internet? There was a time when, though, they could stay up for a very long time. Days, weeks, maybe months. But what's been happening since the beginning of this year is that time has been compressing. First, it was about 48 hours. Then it slipped down to about 24 hours. Now, it's about 12 hours. This is why it is absolutely, absolutely, absolutely imperative that when you see something on the internet that catches your eye, download it that very instant. And it's best if you download that information to a data drive, not your boot drive. That can be corrupted and your system can be crashed, and you would lose that information. What I suggest is get yourself an inexpensive USB external hard drive. You can find them on the internet at very low prices for $70 to $100. Or if you have a leftover hard drive from an old system that's still good, you can get an inexpensive cabinet enclosure for it for about $25 to $30. And there you go. Now you got a way to capture this stuff when it's hot, before the disinformation operatives can put the kibosh on it. Case in point is on Yowza, we reported on a crop circle in Avebury. And there was a stunning development with that, because it was a two-part formation. And the second part of that formation clearly shows a trajectory for Planet X. Well, it was up one day and down the next. Which tells me that the Dark Masters are not only becoming more proficient at tracking down this information and thwarting it, but that they're also expending more resources to do it. And in order to automate the process so that they can use their human assets more effectively, they need to find some technology solution. Now, for the Dark Masters, that is going to be the end of what we call internet neutrality. The great thing about internet neutrality is that it truly is a level playing field. Big and small alike have the same access to the internet. If they can eliminate internet neutrality, then what happens is the large telephone companies bifurcate the web, and then there's a fast lane and there's a slow lane. For those of us who are doing the kind of work we do here at Yowza, it means that we could wind up being on a slow circuit that gives you about as much bandwidth speed as an old 56K dial-up modem. And that also makes us a much easier target. Consequently, what is now taking them 12 hours to remove, hide, or mask can take them 12 minutes. The net result is that the internet would become a strip mall with very few freedoms, and internets in other countries, such as China, would wind up becoming the shining beacons of democracy. Try and imagine that. Here we are in America and we lose that, but that's exactly what's going to happen if internet neutrality is taken away. The argument against internet neutrality is that this is just unnecessary regulation on the part of the government. Well, that same logic was applied to end something that the FCC did for a long time, which was to require that you could only have 7 TV or radio stations. Now what happens is you have these conglomerates like Clear Channel, and they go in and they buy up one station after another. And the first thing they do, after they've installed a device into the head end of their transmitter that connects them directly to their studios, is that they fire the local news departments. And so all of these communities all across the land no longer are getting local news. They get what's pumping out of one studio, and that's it. It's a single voice. Go take a look at John McCain's website. Go to the search and find any mention on his site of internet neutrality. You won't. What you'll find elsewhere on the internet is when he's been asked about it, he just simply says, "That's a very complicated thing. We have to figure it out later." So the question then becomes, who's going to help John McCain figure it out? Could it be U.S. West, a telephone company that has contributed a six-figure sum to his election? And will, upon becoming president, will he turn back to them and say, "What do you guys think?" Well, then you know where it's going to go. And so will John McCain, once U.S. West tells him. And that's why we need to tell him a different message. So if you get out there to one of those town halls, put it to him, again and again and again. As far as it goes for Obama, he's for internet neutrality. I am a libertarian. I vote my party, so I'm not trying to advocate one or the other. Whoever wins is whoever wins. The important thing is that we have to keep internet neutrality, because internet neutrality, well, it's our internet mojo. And I'll leave it on that note. So until the next time we meet, remember Marshall's motto. Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope. This is Marshall, and I'll catch you on the backside. So take my hand, don't turn away.
to play.